Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this special holiday edition of the edition of the Row by Row Garden Show. I'm Travis.
Now, Greg. And ho 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 from the Garden Show called Row by Row.
That's right.
That's good, eh?
That's good. We're glad to have you with us this evening. I can see you're in a cheery...
I'm a cheery mood. Holiday spirit has just run off all over me.
Just coming out of all your pores everywhere.
I'm ready for it.
And we hope everybody else is in the holiday spirit and everybody's getting ready for Christmas time, getting all your last minute ends tied up. We've had quite a little bit of busyness around here. We're making sure we get everybody's orders shipped in time for Christmas. And if you live, I would say, in the southeastern United States, Midwest kind of area, I'll throw up a we'll throw up a shipping map there. There's still a little bit of time for you, last minuters. If you live,
move quick, go
move quick. We couldn't get it. I don't think it would make it to California in time, but the areas where there's 2 and 3 day shipping options, probably still got a little bit of time to make it if you still got some last minute shopping to do. As far as our gardens go around here, every, I would say for the last 4 weeks, either on a Thursday, a Friday, or a Saturday, we've gotten a lot of rain.
We have gotten a lot of rain, and it's been a little unusual, but we need it. We need to resupply our water supply underground. Also, it's going to be some good fishing come springtime. All the rivers and creeks has been plentiful. So it makes it a little aggravating as far as gardening goes, but we need it. We're glad to have it, and it's good to get everything resupplied. And I do love fishing rivers in the springtime. This will make for some great fishing.
That high water table will keep the mountain fish healthy and nice and big for you. As far as the garden goes, it's been kind of putting a hamper on my ability to inject any fertilizer. So I've been kind of resorting to just, before the rains come, I'll get out there and sprinkle me some Chilean nitrate on top of the dirt. And
I did also. I used some Chilean nitrate along with some 10-10-10 to side dress my onions, my radishes, my mustard greens. Oh, what else? Beets. Everything that I got, I went ahead the day before yesterday and side dressed all that. Got out there yesterday, worked them over good with the wheel hoe in anticipation for the rain, so they ought to be jumping and going. I got some fertilizer on my cover crop mustard greens before this last rain, so they've pumped up and going. Everything's looking pretty good.
My onions is taking off pretty good now. I got some that's 8 or 9 inches tall.
If you're in our zone, in our region here, you got your onions planted, now's the time to be starting to put that fertilizer on them. They need it right now to get started, get that bulb started developing. So you need to go ahead. I always like for mine to get started a little bit before I put some fertilizer on, but now's the time. They've started a little bit. Now's the time to start hitting
the water in the soil. Now, sure enough, hit them with that fertilizer.
Yep.
So all those good things going on. Got a garden full of stuff. Hopefully it can dry out soon. I can get some videos out there showing y'all what we got on. Because even though it's Christmas time, winter time, we got gardens full of good stuff growing and coming out all the time.
Yep.
We've had a lot of people asking about the seed. When they're going to be able to find the seed on our site, when they're going to be able to buy the seed, what kind of varieties we're going to offer. So I wanted to take a moment and just kind of explain a little bit of that. So we should have the seed. We are in down here, when you get almost done with something, there's a saying, say in the short rows.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in the short rows and almost done with packing. The majority of the seed will be carrying for next year.
We're expecting our construction crew to come in the end of next week and get started on our building, our climate control seed room. We're in a little bit behind on that, but once they move in, which should happen pretty quick, we've got everything lined up. And we'll do a video of that once we get through it, showing you our facility there, what we put in for our seed room.
And so we've got around 120 different varieties, all different crops, just about anything you could imagine or want to plant. And we hope they should be up and going on the site by the first of the year. If you're not on our email newsletter, You can go on our site and sign up for that. That's probably the best way to stay up to date with new products and new things on the site. I did want to touch on this a little bit. A lot of people have been asking, oh, are we going to carry heirlooms? Are we going to carry hybrids? Where we're at on that. So we've got what I consider a comprehensive selection of both heirlooms and hybrids, because we like to grow both.
Yeah.
I'm not strictly an heirloom person. I'm not really into saving seeds. There are some heirloom varieties I like to grow, but I also a lot of times like to go for productivity, and that's why I like a lot of the hybrid varieties. I also like the disease resistance that the hybrids offer sometimes.
A lot of confusion out there on the internet between heirlooms, hybrids, and GMOs. We hope we can clarify a little. We don't expect to change the mindset of everybody. Hope we can clarify these terms a little bit with our seed offerings that we have. We're not going to offer any GMO seed, and we're not going to offer any neonicotinoid coated seeds.
Right.
So those are the two things that we're really against. However, we don't have a problem with hybrids. Hybrids is a natural selection where you take plants and you get the best out of both, and hybrids are good in our view. We like some of the heirlooms. Some of the heirlooms I don't like. I've tried them, you know, a lot of them. Some of them work for me and some of them don't. So our theory is we're going to do what works best, because our goal is to be successful and for our customers to be successful.
Right. And so we've got some really good performing heirlooms, some really good performing hybrids. As far as the, let's show them the seed packets here. So as far as the seed packets go, for the most part, I'd say over 90% of the seed packets, they're going to be $3.99 each, and then they'll fall under our same shipping parameters, where if you get so many, you get free shipping.
Now, you have to be real careful to fall into the well, I hate to say scamming, but with these seed packs, to fall into, to get caught up in the marketing scam of some of these people, what they do with these seed packs. They'll sell you a seed pack for 99 cents. You say, man, that's a deal, because old Hallsover is charging $3.99. Well, what you have to understand is how many seeds in that seed pack, because that's a huge thing about the value that you're getting. I looked at one of the companies that sell these 99 seed packs, and they're putting 25 corn seeds in a seed pack. They're selling for a dollar. Mm-hmm. Then they charge you $2.50 to ship you them 25 seeds. Well, we're not going to do that. And the reason is you can't be successful at growing any kind of corn with 25 plants.
Now, the plot ain't big enough to get any kind of pollination.
It's not going to work. So we're not even going to attempt to do something just to make you think you're getting a good deal and make you feel good and you not be successful at what you're doing. The smallest seed packs we're going to sell on corn, I think, is around 150 seeds.
Right, right.
So the value is a lot better there than it is paying 99 cents, $2.50 shipping for 25 seeds. So always pay attention to that. And we put the germ rate.
The test date,
the germ rate on our seed packs. We're big about offering quality seeds. A lot of companies out there offer old seeds. We're going to be really, it's going to be a big thing for us to keep the quality of our seeds up, because we think it's important when you go out there and do all that work and plant that seed, you want to make sure it comes up. So we're not going to sell you any bad seeds. You can feel comfortable buying good quality and good germination seeds from us.
That's right. And for your staple crops, like your corn, your beans, and your peas, we'll have the packets, of course, and we'll also offer those in 1 pound quantities. We also will pack to order. If we have it, that quantity in stock, so you can always call us if you need to order more than a pound. We can certainly make that happen for you.
You know, we have somebody answers the phone all the time between 8 and 5 o'clock when we're open on Eastern time. So if you got a question, you want a little bit more of this particular variety, or if you got a question or you got a special order you make, don't hesitate to call us. You won't get a recording, but you'll get a live person to answer that phone and be willing to help you pack whatever you need as far as seed goes.
Yeah, and if it's after 5, you can always leave us a message or just use the chat feature on the website. We have somebody to get back with.
We're going to be set up to satisfy and work with the customer as what they need. Unlike some of the other companies that just wants to sell you a 99 seed pack and move on, we're going to support the product we sell, and we're going to be able to do custom packaging and work with you. And our goal is to make you happy.
That's right. And while we got these two packets here, this is the Ambrosia sweet corn that we've been growing for the last couple of years of bicolor corn and been really, really happy with it. Don't have really any good reason to not grow it again, but I've heard a lot of good things about this incredible. Now, it's a yellow variety, but it's a, sugary enhanced like the Ambrosia. So I think I'm going to try this incredible this year. Yeah. I'm looking forward to growing that one.
And y'all, to y'all folks out there that's stuck on one of those varieties such as I am on Silver Queen, of course, we got all the staples, Silver King, all those that you've been planting for years and years and you had great success with it. We're going to continue to carry those old varieties.
That's right. So around the first of the year, you know, that's usually once Christmas is over with, then people start getting excited about spring before you know it. So we'll have those seeds on there, and you can, if you're one of those people that like to be prepared early, you can go ahead and order them.
We'll get them. I get excited thinking about seed, about what I'm going to do.
Yeah. So, and then our new catalog will be coming out end of January somewhere, and we'll have some of those varieties in there, but the total selection will be on the website. All right, so we'll get into our tool of the week in just a minute, but today what we're going to talk about on the show is biofumigation. Sounds like a big word, but we're going to kind of simplify it for everybody. And I just did a two-minute tip earlier this week showing it was actually kind of a part two of a little mini-series where we planted some broadleaf mustard and then we tilled it in all using this sustainable practice called biofumigation. And so our tool of the week, before we get into talking about biofumigation, is this broadleaf mustard here, which is great to eat, but as we'll tell you on today's show, also has some really good other applications where it can be used for disease and even weed control in your gardens. And we have this in a 1 pound, 5 pound, and 10 pound bag. And someone was asking on Facebook the other day how much it would take to do a whole acre. And the seeding rate is a 0.5 pound per 1,000 square feet. So an acre would take you probably about 20 pounds.
Good math there.
So you can take that 0.5 per 1,000 square feet and kind of extrapolate that out to whatever your area is. So check that broadleaf mustard out. It's pretty cold tolerant. If you live in a southern climate, you would probably still get away with planting some of it. If not, wait until early spring.
And it's one of those cover crops that you can also eat. So if it gets going good, you can go out there and pick your mess up.
That's right. So back to biofumigation. So what is biofumigation and why should we be using it? So biofumigation is using biology to fumigate the soil as opposed to spraying, you know, some of these fumigate chemicals, which can be pretty harsh. And I printed out the label of one of these that seems to be pretty popular called Vapem. And you'll see right there, anytime you see that danger poison on there, that's not something I necessarily want to be putting in an area where I'm going to be growing.
Yeah, probably the most popular fumigant that's ever been in our part of the world was methylbromide. It was used extensively around here for years. It's a gas. They gas the beds, gas the ground as a fumigant. It's some bad stuff. It's gone by the wayside now, but it was used extensively back in the 90s and the early 2000s, I guess on up to just a few years ago. One of the reasons it went by the wayside was from the ozone depletion. It came up that was one of the problems causing our ozone depletion was these gases that volatilize after they come out of the ground. So it went by the wayside. I don't even know if you can buy methylbromide anymore, but they've replaced it with Telon and this one here and some more. So the commercial farmers do still have access to some of these fumigants. They're not as potent, I guess, or as widely used as they once was. Mm-hmm. Because they are very dangerous and bad for our environment.
Right, right. And as always, we like to, if we can find a sustainable way to do something, we'll go for that.
And, you know, for the person that's market farming or even growing their own food, these fumigants like Telon, methylbromide, or Vapem, is that the way you pronounce that?
I guess, Vapem.
It's not feasible to be done. I mean, first of all, it's extremely dangerous, and you have to have training to be able to do it. And it's just not feasible for the homeowner or person that's growing a small market farm to use. So we want to give you an alternative today to that that is going to be safe and also effective.
That's right. So let's talk about how the biofumigation works. And so different plants will release certain compounds when their leaves are broken down in the soil, and specifically brassicas. Different brassicas have different levels of those compounds. Mustards have kind of the, are known for having the highest level. And those compounds are called glucosinolates. And then when those plants are broken down, they release those glucosinolates. And then in the soil, those things are converted to the actual fumigate compounds, which are called isothiocyanates.
That's a good one.
Yeah, isothiocyanates. So to kind of get into those big words and understand that you have, the mustard has one compound in it, and then through this process called hydrolysis or hydrolysis, which means basically you're taking water and you're breaking down this compound. We're breaking down the glucosinolates to the isothiocyanates, and that's what's going to do the fumigation for you.
In layman's terms, what you want to do is you want to incorporate these turnips and mustards and brassicas, primarily mustards, into your soil before seed, before they form a seed head on there to get this fumigation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the isothiocyanates, there's several different classifications of them. The one that is the mustard that you get from the mustard is called AITC for short. So we'll just call
AITC.
AITC. That's a lot easier to say.
That is, yeah. I get tripped up on them big words sometimes.
So,
yeah. And you have just about used your big words for the week this morning.
Yeah. So those chemical compounds are going to help weeds. They're going to help a lot of fungal diseases, and they're going to help the get rid of those parasitic nematodes and just a few of the targeted species out there. And I've had a lot of people ask the question, well, does this affect your beneficial microbiota in the soil and your earthworms? I've yet to see any report that says it has a negative effect on those.
Mm-hmm. It helps with rhizoctonia, which is what we consider crown rot. So if you've ever had a plant that gets a rot right there at the crown, and salvinoda lettuces, anything that's got a head on there is really bad about getting these crown rots. That's rhizoc. It helps with that. It helps with pythium. Pythium is pretty much root rot. So if you take a plant up and you've got some root decay and your roots are rotted off there, that more likely is pythium. A lot of these water spores or these ground diseases, as we call them, this biofumigation helps a lot. Also with wireworms and also with nematodes. And there's really not another method for the home gardener out there besides something like this right here in crop rotation for nematode control.
Well, you can buy beneficial nematodes that will eliminate, but it's pretty costly.
Yeah, everything's got to be perfect for those to work right. And I'm not saying they don't work, but I'm talking about everything has got to be aligned. The stars have all got to be aligned perfectly for them to work like they advertise them to.
Right. And a couple more things that the biofumigation can help with, verticillium and fusarium wilt. Both of those. So lots of really, you know, good things that it's going to do for your soil as far as getting rid of these fungi that tend to plague our plants and some of these bad nematodes. Let's talk real quick before we get into kind of some of the biofumigation practices. We use the broadleaf mustard as our biofumigation crop. Doing a little research, there's another variety of mustard out there called caliente, which means
hot.
Right. So I get it's an extra spicy mustard variety. There's been several of them developed over the years, but the more recent one here was called Caliente 199, and it was specifically designed for biofumigation. Mm. I would imagine it's probably not very palatable.
Probably not.
But really hot, and it supposedly has a really high concentration of those glucosinolates that we need for the biofumigation. Before planting, here's some recommendations. If you're going to do the biofumigation technique, before you plant your mustard, some things that they recommend you do to your soil. The first one is have the pH as close to neutral or 7 as possible.
6.5, you know, 7, somewhere there, I would imagine would be fine.
The sources I read said anything below 5.5 is kind of going to inhibit.
Well, that's going to give you some other problems too. So right. If you got a 5.5, you got some issues. You need to get that pH up.
The second thing what they recommend was to add nitrogen or the nutrients before you plant. And kind of a wide range here, but they recommend 75 to 125 pounds per acre of nitrogen.
Pre-plant.
And that what that's going to do is give you more biomass, more mustard leaves. Because the goal here, the more biomass we have, the more chemicals we're going to get released, the more fumigation is going
to
take place.
I always liked for my plants to be sprouted and coming up before I started to add a lot of nutrients to them, because I felt like I was wasting some nitrogen if I put it out there before that plant was able to take it.
Like it might leach away a little
bit.
I could see that. Either way, you want to give it some nitrogen, some fertilizer, so you maximize that biomass. And then the other one here, which I didn't do, and I may need to do in the future, is to add sulfur as well. And it recommends that you add 1/6 the amount of sulfur that you add nitrogen. So if you had an acre and you put 100 pounds of nitrogen, 1/6 of that, or let's just say you put 60 pounds of nitrogen, you would put 10 pounds of sulfur.
If you can get it, there is a such thing out there called sulfur-coated urea that you could buy, and it would get your sulfur and nitrogen out there at the same time.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But the problem with it is it has apparently a long period of breakdown. So it may be too long of a breakdown for the mustard. I don't know, but it would be neat if you could put it all at the same time. And there is that product out there. It's used in the ornamental industry a lot. It's called sulfur-coated urea.
Hmm. And check that out if you can find it. So those are the three things you should do or kind of have in play before you're going to do biofumigation. Get your pH right, get some fertilizer down, and get some sulfur down. Now we want to talk about when you actually do the incorporation, because this is not like some cover crops where you're just going to leave a mat on top of the soil to, you know, for a weed barrier or something. For this to work, it has to be incorporated. And we've got a list of 8 things here we want to go through of techniques or proper ways to incorporate it to get the best biofumigation. So the first one is to do it before the mustard reaches full bloom.
And another reason for that is mustard can be an invasive weed, so you definitely want to incorporate this and cut it up and get it into the ground before that seed matures. Because around here, a lot of people view wild mustard as one of the worst weeds we have in the wintertime, especially if you're growing oats or you plant some kind of pasture, wheat, anything like that. Wild mustard is viewed as a bad, bad weed because it reproduces so bad, and it causes some problems. There's a field up down the road down here that they've always grown cotton and peanuts on, and for years it loads up and grows wild mustard in the wintertime. It's just filled. It goes full of it. And I've always wondered myself, why don't they just leave it out there? I mean, why don't they hair this thing in before, and why don't they try to do away with it? And then it dawned on me a few years ago when I started studying and started hearing about this biofumigation, is that wild mustard is doing a lot of good suppressing the nematodes for those row crops. So I don't know that they did it purposely, but I think it added a lot. Key here is get that mustard haired in, turned in before it goes to seed.
Yeah. Well, in their situation,
before it bolts,
they're growing Roundup Ready cotton, so they're just spraying it, and it's not a weed problem for them.
No, but I could see where it could help with some other.
Oh yeah, 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 definitely. The second one, so we don't want to let it get a full bloom, till it in before then. The second one is to do this incorporation in the morning or the evening. Not do it during the middle of the day or the heat of the day. And the big reason behind this is, and it's especially the case down here, as hot as it gets down here and then that sandy soil, man, organic matter can burn up in a hurry. And it could burn up quicker than it has time to release those chemicals that are going to do the biofumigation.
If it was on a cloudy day, I think you'd be okay. You could do it during the day, a cloudy, overcast day. But if it's hot, like it does get down here sometimes, you definitely want to wait till the afternoon or morning.
That way you give everything time to convert and break down, and you get those right chemicals in the soil that you need. The third one there is to incorporate when the soil has a good level of moisture. And this goes back to what I was talking about earlier with the hydrolysis. That's the reaction we're looking for here. That requires water. Without water, you can't break down the glucosinolates to the ITC.
None of your cover crops will break down in dry dirt. They all need moisture. If you hair your corn in, it breaks down a lot quicker if it's got adequate soil moisture in there and the microbes work and break that down. Dry soils just are dead, so they don't break down near as much as what good soil. And this goes back to this, why you want adequate soil moisture for this to work.
That's right. And the next few talk more kind of about the equipment you want to use to incorporate it. So the fourth one here is to chop and crush the plant material. Those leaves have to be torn and crushed to release those glucosinolates. So you can't just bury the whole mustard leaf. The incorporation process has to involve some chopping going on there.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And then the fifth one is to, once you do chop it, is to incorporate it immediately after chopping. So there's a couple different techniques you could use here. You could use a flail mower to do the chopping, and then you could come right behind that with a tiller and bury it. For mine, and we'll show some footage up here if you didn't see the 2 minute tip. For mine, I just took my old Troy belt and it kind of chopped and buried it at the same time. If you wanted a better chopper, you had a lot more biomass on the leaves, you might want to flail mow and then till.
I think the perfect piece of equipment this would be a hair disc, and I know everybody don't have that, but if you can disc, you can cut and incorporate it into the soil at the same time, I think that would be the best equipment to do this with. It says here on some literature that we have here, mustard must be incorporated immediately after mowing. 80% of the fumic gas will be released in the first 20 minutes after mowing.
That's right. So you don't want to wait long.
You don't want to wait long.
If you had a big plot, you'd almost want somebody, if you were flail mowing, somebody coming right behind you with the tiller.
Or take that hair disc and do both applications at one time. That's right. Reason I think it would be the best piece of equipment to use is to take that
hair. You might want to run over a time or two with
the hair. Yeah, cut it and incorporate it at the same time. Years ago, I had a friend that had a cabbage in this big field, and he haired up the cabbage and immediately replanted it. And it didn't come up. And he told me about it at the time. He says, we did some research and come to find out there's the cabbage gassed up and killed my seed. At the time, I didn't really understand it. Now it makes a lot of sense to me. So it was those biofumigants from those cabbage releasing that killed the seed. So it's important, if you are going to replant these areas here that you've got these mustard greens on that you're using as a biofumigant, to wait 14 to 21 days after you incorporate before you replant, or you could kill some of your good seed.
That's right. Going back to the method of incorporation there, it says the goal is to put as much plant material in the top 15 to 20 centimeters of soil, which is like the top 5 or 6 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not wanting to put it real deep, and that's why they say don't use something like a bottom plow, because it's just going to put it way too deep, and it's not breaking down where those nematodes are and all this other stuff. So a tiller, a harrow, something like that, keep it in the top, but keep it chopped up. The seventh one here, which is something I didn't do, but sounds like it would make it more effective, is to roll the air. If it's a large farm scale here, they recommend rolling the area. On a small scale, they recommend tarping it. That way you trap those gases and they're not escaping on you, and you get a more comprehensive fumigation.
You still got to be quick though, because you're dealing with 20 minutes there. So you got to have all your ducks in line to be able to do that.
Right, right. That's for sure. And then the last one, number 8, says to leave the area undisturbed for 14 days at least, which is what you mentioned. So give it some time to happen. I'm probably gonna re-till mine once it dries out again, give it another week or two before I try to transplant anything in there.
Yeah.
You don't want to put fresh transplants in there, because like you said, this, if those gases are still popping, it's gonna
kill your seed.
Gonna kill your seed. All right, so I know this was probably new information to a lot of folks, and it's still a fairly new concept to us, but I think it has some real good promise, and it's a really easy to do and sustainable practice that can help your soil health. And we didn't even mention the fact that tilling that mustard is going to add some nice organic matter that's going to help your soil composition, not even counting the fumigation properties.
Right.
So give that a try next fall or maybe in the spring, and I think you'll do wonders for your soil. And then the last thing tonight we're going to do, so we usually answer a question at the end, or two at the end of every show, but this week we're not going to answer any questions. I'm going to read a letter. I'll try not to tear up here.
You are a very emotional type person.
I'm going to read a letter that a guy sent us the other day, and I hope you enjoy it. So it says, "Dear Hoss Tools, my name is Luke Samples. I am 16 years old. I raise laying hens and sell eggs at the local farmers markets. I raise my own field corn to feed my flock, but I encounter many challenges during the growing season, whether that be from insect invasions or strong winds, but the biggest challenge is dealing with the weeds. Where I live, there is becoming less and less farmers. It would be easy to follow the trend and just give up on farming, but I refuse to do so. I want to provide my community with the best quality eggs, because I believe in what you feed them and how you treat them in return gives you a better product for your customer. Now that you've heard my mission and some of my struggles that are involved, I want to tell you why I wrote this letter. I've been getting Hoss Tools catalogs for a long time and love the products and the quality and the craftsmanship. There's only one problem for me, and that is the price tag. I currently can't afford a piece of equipment, but I was wondering if there are any options for getting a cheaper piece of equipment, whether that be from a damaged yet fixable unit or one that was unpainted. I was looking into the Howarts wheel hoe so I can cultivate my field corn. Thank you for reading my letter, and please respond to it. Thank you and Merry Christmas. Sincerely, Luke." So, Luke, 16 years old and growing his own chickens.
Wrote us a handwritten letter.
Yeah, and so we wanted to take this opportunity this Christmas to play a little Santa Claus ourselves and grant a Christmas wish so earlier in the week.
So Luke, you got a present on the way, and we hope you have a Merry Christmas.
Yeah, it's going to Luke's in West Virginia, and got him a high arch wheel hoe with some attachments on the way, and we really hope you enjoy it, man, and hope that you can grow some even better corn and get those chickens fed, and hope you really have a good year next year at the farmer's market selling your eggs.
Yep, and to everybody else out there, I want to say we are so thankful for the year we've had. We're thankful for every customer that we have. We're thankful for people that watch our show that support us. We're thankful to be a part of this movement. We're glad to help people, and our whole goal is to help people be successful in growing their own food. And the customers we have, I honestly think, are the best in the world. They're people just like us, people that like to get out, work out in the dirt, the soil, get their hands dirty, love to see things grow, and love to be productive. And I want to tell you, from all of us at Hoss Tools, Merry Christmas and God bless.
That's right. It was a Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and we look forward to many more years of being able to talk with you on avenues like this. And we will see you next time.